A special proclamation in Yuma. Students put their best ideas to the test at the science fair. And new developments from Yuma's Parks and Recreation. I'm Alexandra Rangel, and you're listening to KWC's Arizona Edition. The city of Yuma is honoring Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Day.
That it states in there that they are going to be training, you know, having that up-to-date training, making sure that they're doing everything they can to be here for the Native American people.
And students gear up for the Regeneron International Science and Engineering Fair.
To accomplish something so big already was like really shocking to me.
Plus, a new feasibility study is underway for Yuma Parks and Recreation. And KWC's Student Newsroom highlights the mentors helping students reach graduation. These stories coming up on Arizona Edition.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
This is Arizona Edition. I'm Alexandra Rangel.
Now, therefore, I, Douglas J. Nichols, Mayor of the City of Yuma, Arizona, do hereby proclaim May 2026 to be National Awareness Month for Murdered, Missing Indigenous Women and Relatives in Yuma County. May we continue to raise awareness for travesties and honor the memories of the loved ones.
The City of Yuma is recognizing May as Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Awareness Month, bringing attention to an issue impacting Native communities across the country. Studies have long shown Native American women face significantly higher rates of abuse and violence compared to white women. Nationwide, murder is the third leading cause of death for Native American women, according to the Urban Indian Health Institute. As for the number of Indigenous women who are missing, that total remains unclear because of major gaps in reporting and data collection. However, a 2014 study by the Federal Bureau of Investigation found more than 5,000 cases of missing Indigenous women across the country. It's a heartbreaking reality that local activist and Kokopa Indian tribe member Roxanne Barley has worked to bring awareness to for years.
Oka, Nyam Roxanne Barley, Chipe Kopaya, Mahan Wash. Today is a good day. This is good. We did it. We did it here in Arizona, Yuma, Arizona, my people, my relatives. We have stood strong for many years to show our resilience, to show that we are still here despite the hardships, despite the disparity. We are still here thriving resiliently.
Reporter Victor Calderon sat down with Barley to discuss the importance of communities like Yuma recognizing Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Awareness Month.
So tell me how that proclamation came about.
I had gotten involved in this movement several years ago. I remember one of the first cases that I came across was for the late Ashlyn Pike, and she had gone missing in Shiprock, New Mexico. And my roots in New Mexico is that's where my daughter's family is from. So I felt a strong connection there. And once I started to realize that this was an ongoing issue and that the work had started way before me, before I had gotten involved. So I felt that we needed to bring that issue and awareness here in Yuma County because we have two tribes here locally, and I needed to let people know that this was an ongoing issue. I needed to let people know that we needed to keep our people safe.
So who did you contact from the city to get this proclamation read? Because I know anytime something like this, there's a process. You have to go to the city or you have to go to the council. How did that work?
It was a learning experience all on its own. I've been trying to get this proclamation going for several years, and just being a thorn on the side, always showing up to council meetings, voicing my opinion, voicing my my concerns about it, asking the community, the city of council to get involved. I held candlelight vigils, I held marches, and sometimes they would show up, sometimes they wouldn't. But the point is that when they did show up, that's when the connection and the relationship began to form and to blossom, because they got to know on a personal level how it really does affect our communities.
So you mentioned that this is personal, or that you felt a connection to recent cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women. So why do you think it was important to have this proclamation? As you said, we have local tribes, Kokopa and Ketsan, but talk about why this was important to have this proclamation.
It's important because a lot of families that have come together to gather to talk about these issues, that we've all found a common ground, and that is law enforcement, whether that's tribal law enforcement, city, sheriff, county. The point is that the law enforcement agencies weren't taking our words seriously. So we knew that there was something that needed to be done, and there's a lack of communication between law enforcement and community members. That was one of the issues that I found the common ground when we came and brought this information to the senators for the state of Arizona. The Native American Caucus had actually invited community members to come forward and talk about it, and I was one of those people. And I told them that there was a difference when they issue the turquoise alert and how they do that process. Two separate cases, one case here locally that was a turquoise alert was issued within 17 days when that person had gone missing, versus there was one case in Maricopa County. The girl had gone missing within one day, and within 8 hours, a turquoise alert was issued, and she was found the same day. So there's proof that the turquoise alert works, but it's just finding that common ground of why is it only working for certain ethnicities and not the others.
So the turquoise alert, for our listeners, that has to do when someone goes missing who is from one of the federally recognized tribes here in Arizona?
That is the assumption that everyone is led to believe. However, when the Emily's Law had gone into process and was going to be accepted, it was changed at the last minute and said that we cannot do this specifically for one ethnicity. We have to include everyone. So they amended the law and made sure that it included anyone between the ages of 18 to 65 who was in imminent danger. And I have a poster here that has the criteria. In order for that case to have a turquoise alert be issued, there are 5 criteria before it needs to be met. And that takes time. That could take days, weeks, months. But in that Maricopa County's case, it only took several hours. So, and that alert was issued, and she was found, okay, located. So, yeah, there's a lot that I'm observing and trying to compare and communicate with local law enforcement agencies and making sure that all law enforcement agencies have that training on the turquoise alert. There are 157 law enforcement agencies in the state of Arizona, and only 17 of them know about the turquoise alert.
Right. And so our listeners might be familiar with, like, the silver alert is for if it's an older adult that goes missing. And if we get on our phone, we get those amber alerts, I think they're still called, when it's like a child
has been abducted in that moment.
So anything else you want to share about maybe the proclamation or something that stood out to you?
Yes, the proclamation, I felt that I was the one that came up with it, that wrote it, so it's more personal. And the promise that it states in there that they are going to be training, having that up-to-date training, making sure that they're doing everything they can to be here for the Native American people. That was my message behind it. I wanted people to know and realize that this is the promise that the city is making, that they're going to do their part. Therefore, we as community members need to do our part in order to protect our community members and in order to protect ourselves, that we know that someone's going to cover our back, that we know that someone is actually going to be diligent and thorough with their work ethics and their duties, and they're going to do everything they absolutely can to bring our loved one homes.
You said you're a member of the Kokopa community. Is there anything, a message you would like to share with our listeners about the community, maybe something that should be known about, any news or any issues in the community?
All positive stuff with the Kokopa Indian Tribe and Quechan. We are working diligently together and trying to unite our communities, because the thing is that we are all experiencing a lot under this administration and all together. And the thing is that we need to start taking a step back and looking at ourselves as villages and start taking care of one another and let the people in these positions that we trust and that we vote for, that they're going to be able to do their part And that's where their communication and the connection comes in, that they come back and they come to the community and they work with us and they see this. So this proclamation shows that they are willing to work with us and that they are aware that we are facing this epidemic and that they're going to do their part. It says, you know, to make sure that the police department is up to par with their training. That part right there holds accountability on their end. And the accountability on our end as community members that we need to unite and work together.
So I wanted to mention, I found something from the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center talking about National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Native Women and Girls. So in 2017, Senator Steve Daines and John Tester from Montana introduced a resolution recognizing May 5th as that National Day of Awareness. And that was in response to the murder of Hannah Harris on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation and other abductions and killings of Native women across the U.S. So is there any local website or social media that you would like to share with our listeners how they can get more information about finding more information about, you know, what's being done locally?
Yes, locally right now, I'm just one person. I'm an advocate. I get myself involved in a lot of different groups that already have been established. One main group that I do work with in connection with the Murdered Missing Indigenous Women is Turtle Island Women Warriors. They're a group located out in Phoenix, Arizona. And what they uncovered was the exposure of the fraudulent sober living homes. That is also in connection with our MMIP awareness, because these people have come onto the reservations to take our people to get help that they promise. But once they're taken to these fraudulent homes, they're left there with no assistance and no help. So that group has been working with families from Montana, from California, from this state. So yes, Turtle Island Women Warriors is a good group that they can really invest in and support. Right now they're working on providing water resources to people out in the Phoenix area. Here locally, I am doing my part, just trying to get involved with the local grassroots here. That's as best as I can really advise. Get involved with your community members, talk to your people, and just, you know, join whatever you can and participate.
All right, Roxanne Barley, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Up next, Victor Calderon takes a look at the latest developments from Yuma Parks and Recreation and how the city plans to better serve the community.
At their meeting on May 6th, Yuma City Council members considered authorizing an aquatics feasibility study. The study would review existing aquatic facilities, gather community input, and evaluate potential sites. It would also provide recommendations to help guide future decisions about aquatic amenities in Yuma. The study would also include an assessment of Kennedy Pool to determine its future viability. Eric Erfer is the director of Parks and Recreation for the City of Yuma. He said community input was strong about the need for an aquatic study.
We need to take a look at Kennedy Pool. We need to see what the future of that is, but we need to take a holistic approach towards aquatics. We wanted to take a look at all of our different aquatic facilities, including splash pads, as well as our pools, figure out what the total true need is, and do a deep dive into what residents specifically wanted out of their aquatics.
The Kennedy Pool location is in Kennedy Park in Yuma, north of 24th Avenue, past McGraw Elementary School. It remains closed as Erfer discussed what the city is looking at.
So it'll take a look at Kennedy. It's going to do a full assessment of Kennedy. Is it repair? Is it replace? If it's replace, is it there? And if it's there, what is that? What is the current need going to be? Could be of long course. It could be with a bulkhead that moves in between so that you could have a little two short courses, something of that nature. Does it have leisure component elements to it? You know, the whole gamut.
Erfer said the pool may reopen at the current location or move based on infrastructure. He said public input is key.
So it's going to be just like it was with the master plan. We're going to be out there with surveys. We're doing pop-up events. We're doing public forums and things of that nature. People will be able to go on our social media sites and find out when those are. So we'll make sure to get that out to the public.
Erfer said the city would also need to consider how much residents would be willing to pay to use the pool. That would determine how much money the city would need to put in its annual budget to operate and maintain the pool. Erfer said the plan would be about an 11-month process. He estimated that building a new pool would cost up to about $18 to $20 million. For KAWC News in Yuma, I'm Victor Calderon.
After the break, Education Solutions reporter Cisco Stargazer talks with local students headed to this year's Regeneron International Science and Engineering Fair.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
Every year, some of Yuma's most innovative students compete in the Regeneron International Science and Engineering Fair. Education Solutions reporter Cisco Stargazer spoke with a few students ahead of this year's competition.
The Regeneron International Science and Engineering Fair wrapped up Friday, May 15th, bringing this year's science fair competitions to a close. For a whole week, students from around the world gathered in Phoenix to present their findings, including Yuma.
Jorge Covarrubias, Jessica Perez, Alba Sampson, and Stephanie Regalado from Harvest Preparatory Academy qualified to compete at ISEF. Their science teacher, Alfred Santos, was very excited for them.
I just want to say that I'm very proud of my students. I mean, not just the three of them, but my entire class, because every student in my class created a different science project. I've seen them work really hard, very curious about different topics, and I'm just super proud of them.
Each year, schools hold science fairs, and for many students, the story's over once they complete their project. But for others, that's just the beginning. Yuma students who win at their schools compete at the county level, and their journey can stop there too, unless they enter a regional fair, like the Southern Arizona Regional Science and Engineering Fair, also known as SARSEF. There, winners have a chance to become ISEF finalists, and that's how four high schoolers from HPA went on to represent Yuma at the global level this May.
I was a little nervous, I'm not gonna lie. I was nervous that I didn't really do as well as I thought I did, but it was a fun time. I think I did really good, and I had an amazing time talking to my judges and getting to know the people around me in my category. And then after I won, at first I couldn't believe it. It was like a dream. But then I got really excited for like the next steps coming up, and then preparing to go to ISEF. It's all very exciting.
That was Jorge Covarrubias, a senior who won a first place award in plant science at SARSEF, and he took home best of show at the Yuma County Science and Engineering Expo, too. His project titled Cactus Patch involved engineering a smart bandage and mobile app to monitor necrosis in saguaro cacti. The app detects color changes in the bandage, which allows Covarrubias to diagnose the cactus and determine the best course of treatment.
So my mobile application will help either gardeners or people that take care of the city's landscape be able to stop the saguaro necrosis uptake in the species. So like if one cactus gets infected, it can easily be treated and it won't affect all the cactuses and it'll make the landscape so much nicer.
Covarrubias added that ecologists could benefit from his project when they grow saguaros for study or replanting efforts.
So my projects would help protect the saguaros for any necrosis outbreaks that could happen during those critical times.
But why saguaros?
Because I felt like I was the most connected to it, and I felt like it had the biggest impact, not only to us, but to the ecosystem.
As a senior nearing graduation, Covarrubias is focusing on college next. And he already won a scholarship to the University of Arizona at SARSEF.
I don't really know exactly like if I want to pursue plant pathology, or I'm also looking into biomedical engineering. And then I'm just trying to weigh my options before I head to college in the fall.
At ISEF, Jessica Perez, a junior, won a scholarship to Arizona State University. And despite the scope of her project, she's mainly interested in neuroscience.
With this project, I got to observe behavior. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to look at the neurological aspect of it, but it definitely helped, and I enjoyed working with behavior.
Perez's project was titled Drawn by Scent, and looked into creating an eco-friendly pesticide using microbial volatiles.
I was actually researching agriculture, and I came across the amount of pesticide usage, and I went down that rabbit hole. And living in, well, Yuma, Arizona, we're exposed to a lot of pesticides and agriculture, and I decided to try to help find an eco-friendly alternative to the pesticides that are already in use.
Microbial volatiles, she explained, are basically smells.
For instance, the smell that you smell after it rains, that feels means Saccharomyces griseus. And so in nature, these bacteria have a very fundamental role. One of their roles is serving as chemical signals for all kinds of insects. So for a certain species, it might indicate a good mating site, inducing attraction, or for others, it might indicate pathogens, which could trigger repulsion. And seeing how these bacteria already work in the environment, what better way to find an eco-friendly alternative than using already ecological processes?
Bettis accomplished this by encapsulating bacteria on two surfaces for them to grow on, cellulose fiber paper and beta-cyclodextrin, a type of sugar.
With the results that I got, they could definitely be used as like a stepping stone to something bigger. Because at the stage that I have it right now, I found that encapsulating microbial volatiles doesn't affect their potential in attracting insects, but I haven't been able to test how long these effects would last on insects, which would be a great way to expand on this project, and I hope to expand it in the future.
Alva Sampson's project also looked into microbes, but with the purpose of fighting them. Her project titled Hermosura Natural produced an antimicrobial lipstick using epazote, guayaba leaf, jamaica, and cochineal pigment.
I was struck when I did research on how many infections people get throughout the year. And as a young woman, well, obviously, I love makeup. So I was like, I need to find a safer way to, like, go about this issue.
Sampson explained that she focused on using all natural traditional Mexican plants that would be good for the skin.
This could possibly be something to replace like chemicals or like harsh preservatives that cosmetic companies use in their lipstick or cosmetics.
She found that she was able to reduce certain staph bacteria and fungi.
I also did a colony count test,
and it did reduce the colonies of bacteria that did grow. And
the color was very consistent, so that means like the color wouldn't vary throughout days when you use it.
Sampson shared that she hopes her project will provide a safer alternative to commercial lipsticks, and she thinks this research opportunity was really good for her future career and goals. Those mainly concerned becoming a nurse. Competing at ICEF, however, has become a surprise along that journey.
I was really in shock because I didn't expect me to like be an ICEF finalist, because it's like this is my second year doing a research project, and to accomplish something so big already was like really shocking to me.
Lastly, Stephanie Regalado's project also dealt with traditional Mexican plants. Titled De la Raíz al Remedio, Regalado infused fiber gauzes made of agave.
The goal of the study was to determine how hierba de manzo and cempasúchil compare in antibacterial effectiveness when incorporated into a fiber-based biomaterial, and how chemical pretreatment influences the performance of the gauze.
In her project description for ICEF, she explained that access to medicine remains a high challenge due to costs, especially in developing countries. Because of this, she wanted to engineer a cost-effective and practical alternative to conventional gauze and antibiotics. Her results showed that
both plant extracts inhibited bacterial growth, but hierba de manzo demonstrated stronger and more consistent antibacterial effects. Overall, this study demonstrated that chemically engineered plant-infused fiber gauze can function as an effective low-cost and biodegradable wound dressing, translating traditional medicinal knowledge into a modern biomedical material.
Regalado hopes to become a pharmacist, and after she graduates this year, she'll most likely be studying bioscience at ASU. As she and her peers prepare for the next chapter of their lives, they'll be doing so with the distinction of competing on an international stage. None of the students placed this time around, but after SARSEF and ICEF, they're walking away with several accolades and scholarships to their names. Congrats! For Arizona Edition, I'm Cisco Stargazer, and this reporting is supported by a grant from the Arizona Local News Foundation.
They say it takes a village to raise a child, and the same could be said about helping someone reach graduation. It takes a community of teachers, mentors, and supporters working together. Student reporter Sahe Barcenas spoke with the people who make that journey possible.
Learning math. I can work through challenging problems.
Mistakes are part of the learning process, and it's okay to make them. With practice, persistence, and support, I can improve.
This is the sound of a classroom breaking a wall of doubt. For many of us, the hardest part of college isn't a subject, it's the pressure of the unknown. But behind every student working toward graduation, there is often a voice that refuses to let them fail, a mentor who saw potential in us. I'm Sahei Bárcenas from Siendo Primero, and we'll hear from someone who believes that our potential is more than any complicated equation.
My name is Isla Peterson. I am the current director of faculty development and a professor of mathematics.
She knows that for many, the hardest part of college is the doubt they carry about reaching the finish line.
I think that there are many students that come into my classes thinking they can't do math. And it's interesting because I watch my students do math successfully when they don't think they are and they're doing fine. I think it's important for students to be able to say kind things to themselves and recognize that they are capable, because if nobody else in the world believes in you, you should always believe in yourself. It increases your odds you're going to be able to face the challenges of life when you know that you can do it, because I think every single person who walks through my door can. They just need to believe it.
To Professor Peterson, no variable is too complex and no obstacle is a dead end. Instead, she provides the tools for every student to unlock their full potential.
If a student doesn't feel like they're in a safe environment where they can be themselves and they feel respected and believed in, I don't think that they can perform to the best of their abilities. So I like to try to do things that honor my students in small ways. Like I try to do translations on my tests and quizzes into the Spanish language so that they have the opportunity. Like if one word just doesn't make sense, they're like, oh no, flip it over. It's okay. And I bring candy to help lighten the mood on test days. And building the words of confidence and the daily affirmations is mostly just like, you really do need to talk kindly to yourself because we deserve it. You all deserve it. So it's just my way of trying to make my students feel like they belong in this space, because they do.
The work of a great mentor goes beyond the classroom. Now they stand by our side to ensure we become the version of ourselves ready to conquer any challenge.
One of the most powerful things that I walked away from my college experience with was a deeper awareness of myself. I learned my study styles, and I learned that I didn't like having to do an assignment overnight. So I learned how to pace myself back a few days, how I responded to stress, and I figured out how to manage that, how to respond to disappointment, and how I could build myself back up. So that would be what I hope that any student walks away from their college with, is not only the knowledge that you obtain in all of your studies, but a deeper awareness of yourself, your strengths, your weaknesses, how you can build yourself up to succeed, how to face disappointments and challenges, and what works best for you.
Failure is just a part of the process, and graduation is proof that we learn how to stand back up. To every student who is tired or who is just a few steps away from holding that diploma, listen to this.
You are all more capable than you even realize, so just believe in yourselves.
To our professors and mentors who help us until we cross that stage, thank you for believing in us until we could believe in ourselves. From Siendo Primero, I'm Sahei Bárcenas.
Persistence and support, I can improve. I want you guys to believe that with every fiber.
Arizona Edition is a production of KWC, Colorado River Public Media. Questions or comments are welcome. Send them to az@kwc.org. You can also connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. Our theme music was used with permission and composed by Stephen Hennig and performed by members of the Yuma Jazz Company. More information at yumajazz.com. I'm Alexandra Rangel. This is KWC's Arizona Edition. Thanks for listening.